Francis Pufford has written dazzling books of non-fiction, and his first novel, Golden Hill, is typically energetic and surprising. Set in New York before the American Revolution, there's a hero we know only as Mr. Smith, a mysterious fortune, the debtor's prison, and a trial for murder. A rollicking piece of storytelling. So I asked Francis Pufford what New York was like in those days.
It was a tiny town, for one thing, more or less confined to the southernmost tip of Manhattan Island. Still half Dutch, but the Dutch language was dying away, and the Roosevelts and the Vanderbilts were just turning into old New Yorkers rather than an ethnic minority. 1,000 slaves or so. But a frontier town, somewhere that faced a wild continent, and the wild continent began, you know, anywhere north of Wall Street.
100 times smaller than London, or 1% of London in population terms.
Literally, London was having its maximum 18th century moment, and New York is a country town by comparison.
And when you began to spin this tale, you decided to find a kind of language that would take us back to that period. Presumably you thought that you had to do that or it wouldn't ring true.
I knew that the language had to be part of what carries the reader to elsewhere. There also needed to be a set of kind of different tones of voice and judgments and understandings of the world actually written into the timbre of all the sentences. There's a real troubling anachronism for me in historical novels that just use modern English. They seem to me to be diminishing the difference of the past, and I wanted the difference of the past to be there on easy and very entertaining terms, but nevertheless to be a bit of a challenge and a constant surprise.
And of course, you've got the satisfaction of knowing that no one can prove if you get the speech rhythms right or wrong.
I like to tell myself that nobody else knows 1746 New York better than I do. Nobody else has spent more time there.
You could subtitle the book, Golden Hill, Mr. Smith Goes to New York, or Mr. Smith Goes to Washington in the 20th century, because the hero, the main character, is Mr. Smith. That's how we know him. And he is a picaresque hero in the tradition of the 18th century novel. It is a kind of homage to the early novel, isn't it?
It is. It's me, at the beginning of writing novels myself, winding the form back to its beginning as well, when the rules were much looser. And I wanted Mr. Smith to be a kind of Tom Jones-like protagonist, although, as it turns out, not giving too much away, he's rather more hapless than that. He's not the kind of hero who's the finest swordsman in all
but
France.
He's never quite going to pull it off. And for anybody that knows New York, there are very touching moments. There is a scene set in Trinity Church on Guy Fawkes Day, the 5th of November, and Trinity Church sits right beside Ground Zero. It was covered in the dust of the Twin Towers on 9/11. So there is a feeling of the old New York coming out of the mists back to us through the place that we know and feel.
One of the oddest parts of doing the research for it was walking endlessly round the site of Ground Zero while steadily trying to ignore it and to look 250 years underneath it. The only bits of Mr. Smith's New York that survive in direct physical form are the graveyard of Trinity Church and its counterpart, the African burial ground, which is where the slaves got buried, now under a federal building a couple of blocks north of City Hall Park. And there's something about that very old death which certainly joins in your mind with the more recent horrors of Ground Zero.
Let's hear what it was like on the 5th of November 1746 in downtown New York.
A stippling of black stuff, not yet burnt, floated like slag on molten iron over the fire's volcano heart, and at the peak, the rising orange gold transmuted again into rushing, gauzy tongues 15, 20 foot high, breaking in flickers at their ends into particulate tides of crimson sparks that pulsed up high and slackened again as the billows of heat assailed the night sky, pushed into its cold, lost way, and sank again. That sky. New York had gathered to ignite its biggest signal of assertion and wrath, and the intensity of the light and heat only seemed to reveal, for once at its true scale, the immense darkness of the continent at whose edge the little city perched.
It's your first foray into storytelling, it strikes me that you've enjoyed it very much. You're a natural sort of spinner of a yarn.
As a non-fiction writer, it was always the story-shaped sense of things I could make that I was interested in. But there has been a real liberation in taking one more decisive step away from the world of fact and just setting myself free to tell pure story.
Francis Bufford, thank you very much.